Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, now it's the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. I am James Whelan. No more mucking around. The advice that you see is general. I'm joined by Heath Moss from HLM Investments. As usual,
you'll get there one completely day, mate.
Made a hash of the intro. Mate, thank you for joining us on the podcast. How are you going, Heath? How are you now?
Very well, thanks, mate. Very well. I'm very glad to have another adopted Adelaidean in here today. So we only get quality from us today.
We are joined by StoneX. Mate, StoneX chief talking head, what's your official title there? David Scar.
In Australia, I'm not chief. Doing disservice to Matt Simpson. I'm a market analyst at City Index is my title here in Australia, but I have multitude of titles around the world, including some with StoneX.
Okay, good on you, mate. Well, look, and it was an amazing job and an amazing get, and I'm glad that you got it because they're a really good operation and fantastic. We are sponsored by the Australian Mutual Funds Exchange. They're providing access to any mutual fund anywhere around the world. Go and check them out today. Thank you very much for their help and sponsorship that keeps the show going. Moving on now, Heath, mate, it's been a week. When I was sort of a little bit sort of hesitantly, cautiously saying that maybe we should be adding to our fuel position, which is the energy providers. I didn't, obviously you weren't expecting what happened on the weekend to happen on the weekend.
No.
Colossal tragedy. No. But has definitely did turn around the energy story last night. Maybe not so much. Either of you guys want to have a go at it? I've never been a huge. Actually, let's have a bit of a discussion about this first on here as well. I love this hat. Let's have a discussion about this as well, about making money or profiting from a tragedy like this, and sort of how you reconcile as a human being and how you reconcile as an advisor as well. And then we can sort of talk a little bit more about potentially where some of the investment themes lie behind this. How do you do it? I had a discussion with SPS about it, and I said it's difficult for me to go to clients and say, hey, this tragedy has happened, so here's how we're going to be making you money. It was sort of the same way when Ukraine happened, and it was like the easiest thing to do was just buy the weapons manufacturers, and that sort of, if you don't ethically it's a difficult thing to do. How do you reconcile those sorts of things as an advisor, Heath?
It's a tough one. I've never been one for the short-term trade, though. So I've never seen it as you know, profiting off of tragic events like this. They do create opportunity. And I've never been one. I've never bought a weapons stock or anything like that. So I can wipe my hands there. But in terms of, I suppose the main thing is energy and oil and that. But I think in today's world, it's just been... There's always a conflict. Sadly, there's always a conflict somewhere. And generally, it affects energy in some shape or form, especially over in the Middle East. So it does present an opportunity. But, I mean, as we've seen the last couple of days, though, I mean, we had that initial spike with oil, et cetera, but it's come right back. So maybe it's not going to present the sort of investment opportunity we thought it was. But, I mean... Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know. It's really hard. It's a really tough situation. It is what it is, and we sort of detach ourselves from it here in Australia because we're so far away from most of these conflicts, and they really don't impact us apart from these commodity prices. We sort of, I suppose, we detach ourselves, and that is part of the ethical and moral stance we have. And I'll never buy a weapon stock. I don't think I'd ever bring myself to doing that. But you know, I'm comfortable using oil, jumping into these oil and energy plays when opportunity presents, because we're never going to be able to avoid these conflicts. There's always going to be something happening.
Yeah. Well, David, how do you? It's difficult to talk about. I just sort of what's how do you? The word is reconcile. How do you reconcile these things of doing your job, but also the fact that you need to have a heart in there, but then you also go, there is actually now the situation has changed. And if you do believe that long-term, the situation has definitely changed, that the cargo ship is turning around in the harbour, definitely with regards to the relationship between the Saudis and Israel, that's now sort of changed. Any bridges that were being built there are now sort of, that's going to be postponed. It's changed the situation for energy supply in the Middle East. If you think, anyway, I'll let you talk. Go. Sorry, David Scott, everyone.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and it's difficult to go and obviously disconnect, but that's ideally what our jobs are. We're designed to go and be giving investment advice as to go and how to make money. Obviously, the human toll is something that's dramatic, but I'm not paid to go and give solutions or advice or comfort in relation to that. I'm there to go and then provide information as to how to go and make money. And when you get a market event that comes up, as Heath pointed out, it does present opportunities. Unfortunately, that's as simple as that, but that's what our jobs are as investment professionals. We go and give advice when it comes to financial markets. We'll leave other things to other people.
Yeah. Good. Now, what do you see happening over in that part of the world?
Well, it's really interesting. As Heath pointed out, the price action has really been quite bearish when it comes to crude. After you saw that initial spike, the inability to go and hold. Look, I put a tweet up earlier on today just talking about, you know, the markets. They expect things to go and play out almost in real time and reprice all the risk and then go and see it actually happen in real life. And I just wonder whether there's been a lot of thought process put into it. I know there was a story out in the New York Times talking about Iran potentially didn't have a lot of knowledge and was surprised by what Hamas went into and did last weekend. A lot of speculation in that particular area. And we know that these things can unravel pretty quickly. The risk premium, I think, is worth more than what's in there. The broader story, though, for crude is, what's it telling us about what's going on in the world economy and the outlook from here? Because we've got the two major suppliers in the world basically cutting off supply at this point in time. Demand looks pretty strong, but the price can't respond. So the signal's pretty strong for me.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. I did an SBS thing on Monday afternoon doing that world news, whatever they said, and I was just like, you know what, for me. At that level, oil already looked like it should have been added to, and it was oversold, and it was probably going to be going up this week anyway. What happened really just sort of accelerated that situation as well, in the same way that, I mean, anyway, we'll cross over to markets. Heath, you do a pretty good market wrap, mate. Do you want to go over to that?
No worries. You want to bring
trying to keep my head out of looking at the headlines. That's all.
Do you want to bring the charts up, mate? You've got the buttons there.
Oh, why don't you have the buttons? Okay.
All right, you're going to give me the authority, mate. It's been a good week for especially the S&P 500. We're up about 1.5% for the week. 4 days in a row we're up. With respect to that trend line and the 200-day moving average, really nicely there. The next step is maybe heading towards that 4,440 mark where that red trend line is. If we can't break that, then we're heading straight back down where we came. If we can, then we go higher. But it's been a positive week, which is, you know, in stark contrast to the last probably 3 or 4 weeks or the last month. September was pretty average. We've got earnings in the US kicking up this week. We've already had Pepsi and LVMH report. We've got the big guys on Friday: BlackRock, Citi, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, etc. So the banks always kick it off. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, their net interest margins, how their books are looking, whether the latest spike in yields really hurt them or not. Delinquencies, we'll look at them, whether, you know, any of the mortgage stuff is starting to rear its ugly head, especially with cars and credit cards as well. We already know delinquencies there are spiking pretty high. So it's been a good week though. It's been a good week. Trading about 17 and a half times forward earnings here. That's about it for the SPX. I mean, that's
David. I'll bring up. I'm going to jump over to Japan in a second, but David, if you want to talk about what your take is on the US markets, just jump in. We've got CPI tonight, the most important CPI number ever.
It's the most important one ever, every single month, isn't it, of course?
That's right.
Does anyone really go and see anything other than disinflationary forces when it comes to US inflation? No, looking across the board, there's nothing that's jumping out at me at the moment suggesting that there's going to be an inflation breakout anytime soon. I know there's a lot of inflationistas out there who get excited about, you know, a strike here and everything, you know, little, you know, pockets of news elsewhere. But the story is pretty for me. And I think the broader story, and going back to the SPX, you know, the price action over the past couple of weeks has been really, really bullish. That big bounce off 4,200 really caught my eye. Nice, a bullish hammer. And we're now seeing that upward trajectory. And it corresponds with what I think is almost like a coordinated shift from Fed speakers over the past week or so. The tone has really gone and changed when it comes to this high for longer narrative. Now we're talking about, you know, markets doing the work for them. I think a lot of people are starting to go and suspect that we're seeing that Fed policy pivot now starting to come into play.
What a change a week makes, isn't it? Where suddenly it was higher for longer. We're all going to die. Call your mother, call your grandmother. I called her out too on my note, on my weekly note, that what's her name, the CFA. What's her name? Genevieve?
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Anyway, so call your mother, call your grandmother, because the 10-year had gone to 4.9 or something like that. And it was just like, hey, just calm the farm. Is that, what have you got? Is that the...
That's the 10-year now.
That's the 10-year? Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I got a feeling that last week, that blow-off top that we saw following the JOLTS report, you know, we know it gets about a 30% response rate, and the markets are extrapolating that's going to mean like multiple Fed hikes near-term and everything else. And all of a sudden, the rest of the data have come out weak. And probably ironic that, you know, a pretty flimsy, volatile read, you might see the top for yields this cycle. I personally think that we may have seen the highs last week.
It certainly felt like a blow off top on the yields last week. I mean, it was just ridiculous how quickly they went up and spiked, especially on the long end. The short end really didn't do too much. But also, if you listen to, I was reading the transcript from Pepsi and LVMH over the last couple of days, and they're starting to really see a softening consumer in the US. I mean, volumes worldwide for Pepsi were down 2.5% and 6%, down 6% in North America. Their earnings only lifted because of an 11% price increase over there. So we're seeing people still happy to pay those higher prices, but buying less. And even LVMH, which has been really resistant, the luxury goods guys, they're seeing Europe go backwards, North America softening, China recovering, but nowhere near as fast as they expected, and growth slowing. I think their growth was around 9% for the Q3 versus 17% for Q2. So you're just starting to see those higher prices and the dwindling of savings really impacting the consumer, especially in the US, but globally as well.
Yeah, I'm just putting in, slotting in my side here. That is an article on the FT on US consumers cutting back on card spending. That data that was coming out from, it was the wallet, what is it, wallet.com or something like that, whatever they were, that tracks these things. There's the average annual interest rate on card balances is going up way past 20 into 25 sort of sectors up there. And it was just showing that the people are cutting back on that spending because it's effectively the rates have done the job that they were intended to do, and it has solved its own problem.
Yep.
Who's next? David, anytime I stop talking, you just jump in, mate.
I want to ask a question of David. What do you see as the biggest threat to markets over the next, say, 6 to 12 months?
We've already seen too much over tightening from central banks, and with policy working in a lag that we've really not gone and given enough notice to some of those indicators you're just pointing out right there, and we get that big overshoot in policy.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
and then you've got to go and lead to that massive reduction. It's no evidence of it yet when it comes to some of that lagging data, particularly when it comes to the labor market. But I think to me that is the biggest risk, you know, particularly in the likes of Europe. Have gone very, very hard, don't have a lot of good growth dynamics, not a lot of competitiveness in a lot of areas. I wonder what potentially might 2024, the first half, might go and bring when all of this tightening starts to go and bite across the other global economy.
So now, do you think do you think we'll see a recession in the US in the first half next year?
Potentially. I'm not one of those commentators who likes to go and give probabilities, but no, it's something where we know that it's going to go and crimp a lot later when it comes to the tightening, given the way the mortgage market is structured there in the United States relative to other parts of the world. If there is going to be a recession in the United States, it's likely to be probably one of the last of the developed economies to go into it. But certainly it's a risk. It's a risk across a lot of developed economies, including here in Australia.
Beautiful. Thanks, mate.
I was lucky enough at the beginning of the week to go to a quarterly presentation, a market update from BlackRock, and they had coming down from Singapore, Ben Powell, I think his name was, CIO of APAC Strategy, I suppose. He's basically just the guy who's calling the shots for them. An amazing knowledge, an amazing thing. Someone very just sort of casually asked him what his take on Japan was, and he gave the most blindingly, mouth-frothingly bullish case on the Nikkei going into the Bank of Japan meeting at the end of this month. Halloween, he's like, Halloween. They're either going to talk about abandoning yield curve control. There is $7 trillion in US, not in US, but there's $7 trillion of US equivalent in yen sitting in Mrs. I can never get the name right. Watanabe, you're better with those things, but effectively Japanese savings. The inflation rate will stay stubbornly higher for longer, not high, but higher. He said it is inevitable that that money will just pour itself so quickly into the Japanese market. It's the easiest bull case you could possibly have for the Nikkei. Do you want to pull up a chart there, Heath? And he also said in yen as well. So he said it's going to be this rare occurrence. So this is why he's sort of talking about this Halloween theory of just like two moons of just perfection of being, you could be long Nikkei and long the yen at the same time. And he said it's going to be magical.
Did you mention anything about earnings risk there? I've interviewed Ben as part of a prior role that I used to do, obviously. And did he give any indication as to what the implications would be for earnings? Because we know that a lot of the earnings tailwinds for the Nikkei in particular have come through from the weaker yen. If we get like a yield curve control and abandonment, you're going to see the yen strengthen dramatically. That'll be bullish for offshore investors. So no invested in Nikkei, but what will it do for earnings? Did you mention anything about that?
No, I think he did, but I didn't write it down. I was so busy just trying to write down what he actually put together.
It should be really bullish. 60%, I think 60% of constituents on the Nikkei are exporters. So it should be really bullish in terms of when they're converting those earnings back to yen.
He did mention things like Toyota in there. But yeah, so I mean, do you concur? What do you think, David? You know, we don't usually talk about the Japanese market much on the show.
To the end of the month. You look at what's been going on with the chart, like it's one of the most bullish charts in the world, you'll find. I know, given what we've been going through right now, a lot of it is because of that weakening in the yen. So I just wonder whether if you go and start talking about a dramatic strengthening in the yen, whether the story will go and change there. No, we've seen across multiple jurisdictions when you run very, very loose monetary policy settings for a long period of time, asset prices tend to go and ramp up quite dramatically. So that's the risk that I'll be looking at there. That you might go and see that currency translation actually start to act as a pretty big headwind at some point.
When we're talking about inflation in Japan too, and high inflation, we're only talking 3-4%. It's not like here when we got to the 8-9% inflation. It's only 3-4%, but I mean that's historically high for Japan, but it's not blow your waste type inflation.
You know me, and you can have the cases. The flow of funds is always going to be the winning thing for me. If you say that a whole bunch of people are going to be buying this particular stock, even though it's an absolute piece of crap, you can't get in the way of that. It will always, the flow of funds will always outweigh that. And this is sort of, his case was on the, you don't really know inflation is there until it's there, and you get this sort of feeling. He's just like, people will be moving this thing out of their bank accounts, and it has to go into something, and it's got to go into a market that's rallying. It's just like the sentiment is going to be so bullish for that as it's sort of predicted that yes, it's going to stay above the 2%, or it's I didn't say high, I said higher. Mm-hmm. Once that sort of sets in, that's where that it's going to plow into the market. The flow of funds, you won't be able to get in the way.
You would imagine it's going to be a pretty aggressive wage negotiations coming through at the start of the fiscal year in March next year to go and get that. We know that they're battling against negative demographic forces and their population's declining and the like. So it'd probably take something like that for me to go and get excited about the prospect for sustainable inflation. I personally don't see it right now.
All right. Well, let's dance. What's your... I don't know, David. What are you spruiking at the moment? What do you see? Where's the best cases? Where's the worst cases? Take us around.
Look. If you go from a macro perspective, and you do believe that what we're seeing from the Fed is a coordinated effort to go and start signaling that they're going to go and pivot and put a marker in the sand and say the peak is in for the Fed funds rate, and then let other forces further out the curve take place. You start looking at the asset classes that are really influenced by movements in the yield curve. So things like gold are pretty interesting at this point in time. Dollar yen is another big one that's been driven a lot by yield differentials recently. So anything that's got a really, really big play on yields, NASDAQ you could probably throw into the other mix as well. All the kind of markets you want to be paying close attention to when it comes to a trend reversal of sorts.
Hey.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, pretty much the same. Yields are still driving most of the market here, and like David said, this week's been the first time where we've seen a coordinated sort of attack on yields. Whether the Fed thought they were running away too much, getting too high too quickly again, which could have caused more problems. We've seen 30-year fixed mortgage rate in the US climb to 8%. When who the hell is going to be buying a home over there on a 30-year 8% rate? I mean, unless you're forced to. And that brings its own problems. I mean, if construction, comes to a halt, which it should be at those rates, jobs will be lost, and that could snowball into other things.
Correct.
But, yeah, I would expect, I mean, we know my base case. I'm expecting the US head into recession next year, the first half of next year. Yields to come down. I think we're seeing about 100 basis points factored in again to yields being stripped last next year. Australia, I feel, isn't actually in a really good position now. We've seen the consumer here be a lot stronger than expected, even though our savings are being dwindled and not dwindled as fast as the US. And the housing market has remained really, really resilient with that high net immigration here. And I would expect finally, and we've heard rumors and rumblings again of more Chinese stimulus, China to really ramp up again next year. And that's going to obviously be good for our resources and tourism and education, et cetera, here as well. So, but in the short term, it's still about yields. As long as the conflict in Israel doesn't escalate, which I don't think it will do, I think yields will continue to dominate markets globally.
Yep. No doubt about that at all. Look, last bids, and then we'll get on to the footy tips. We had a couple of wins. David, anything on markets? And then we're going to switch over to the fun stuff, mate.
I think I've covered off everything I wanted to say. I want to hear what your footy tips are.
Now, last week, I tipped the Bears to beat Washington, and everyone called me crazy. I said they need about 6.5 points. It turns out they didn't need any points at all. They won by about 20-something points. It was incredible. So James is still on a run, hot to trot. Heath almost also got up. Did you have Philadelphia? Yeah, the Eagles?
Eagles covering the line, yeah.
Yep. Now, what have you got this week, mate? Let's back it. Let's really make some proper bank.
I've got it's another simple one. It's just the Falcons to cover the line at 2.5 versus the Commanders. That the Bears flogged last week, I think it's only 2.5, which surprises me. So I think the Falcons will get up there. I was going to go 49ers again, considering how hot they are, but we'll do something different this week. Falcons to cover the line.
Yeah. Well, I've got to do the Thursday night game. So the Friday game our time. So that way we make sure that people listen to this podcast nice and early. It is the Chiefs versus the Denver Broncos. You, me, David, and a few mates would probably have a pretty good effort against the Denver Broncos at the current time. Chiefs will easily blow that away. So I think it's 10.5 that they've got. So take that out. You know, it's that the, they'll cover that piece of cake. I think they'll probably buy about 20 or 25 in that vicinity. David Scutt. So yeah, take the money on that. So that's good. David Scutt, what's your footy tip of the week? Or any sporting tip, really, if you want.
Look, I don't have a tip so much, but I think tonight's game in the Cricket World Cup between Australia and South Africa is a pretty key one for the Aussies. We know that South Africa typically crumbles in a lot of these big tournaments in the cricket arena, at least. And if the Aussies can't beat South Africa, I reckon they're custard for this World Cup. Not really the conditions they're used to playing in. And, a pretty big loss to India first game, so a really crucial one tonight.
Yeah, okay, well, eyes on that. I do like one of my all-time favourite pastimes is seeing South Africa step up the cricket on the world stage. I mean, you know, couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people. The hello to all of our South African listeners as well. Hope you're doing well. And to the people who hate me, most of them are. Hello to our troll on YouTube as well. I'm pretty sure that it's Pete. It's our mate Pete from Brisbane, mate. He's we've got a hater.
We've got a troll.
We have a troll. We've got a troll. And I hope Pete, he's doing okay. Hello to all of our listeners, and hello to all of our haters as well. Thank you very much. If there's a way that we can make this better, please write it on a piece of paper and send it to me at the show. Care of, I don't know. I'm not doing that. Look, that's about it for the show. Don't forget to vote. Is it this weekend? Sorry. Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday.
Don't forget to vote. I've got a vote. I will be voting yes, but the reasons behind it are nonsensical because my beautiful wife has decided she's voting no because she doesn't. She said, I haven't been told enough about it. And I was like, well, hang on. If you just go to, and she said, no, I haven't been told enough about it. I'm like, but if you just go, and she said, no, I haven't been told enough about it. I'm just like, okay. So I'm going to have to vote yes just to offset her no vote. That's effectively what I'm doing. So it had nothing to do with the stance on what's going to happen to the Constitution. I'm just trying to, you know, carbon offset these things. So look, make sure you get out and vote, and just make sure you know what it is that you're voting for or against. And that's all that I ask, is that you just do the homework and do the research that you've got coming up. I've got one last little note as well. I will be presenting at the Ensemble ALPD, All Licensee PD Day at the end of November. There'll be a link to it placed as many places as you can. Hello to Ensemble. They get me some doing some amazing work. I'll be presenting at the end of November at their All Licenses PD Day. I'm talking about client trust, ASIC, generally sort of, you know, non-market related things in myself as a senior industry person. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll tell a few jokes on the way too. So get along to that if you can. As well. David, anything to conclude with? Otherwise, I'm going to wrap it up.
Be good to your mother, and importantly, be good to your wife if you're married.
All right. Good on you. Thanks, Heath, for joining us. Thanks, David, for joining us. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure. Have a good one.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.